It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week we are back after a little break. We took time out. It's summer, man. I need to eat. I'm a fat person, so I need to sit there and eat for a bit. We're going to review an album, and we've come back to Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and we've got a guest, and I'm not going to let you introduce yourself, Mark, because you've been on once, so it's my job now. Of Acid Rain and Empire of Evil, welcome to the show, and I've heard the new song, it's fucking cool. It's good to have you back in such a short space of time. It's almost as if, like, you've come back for double herpes when you come on this show.
Just come back for more of that
itchy face and itchy crotch and
the addiction of the disease and of, yeah, sexual diseases.
I'm good at puns, but so Mark, tell us a little bit about what's going on with Acid Rain. We've heard the new single, it's fucking spot on, and the Triple H moment is something that I'm into, so what's going on, man? It's cool.
The great thing about the new song and all of the songs on the new album is, there's not one member in the band who didn't have some sort of writing like towards the songs. You know, we all came together and did it the old school way, where we just got in a room and just jammed. Paul had the main ideas, but we would kind of grow from them, you know. So we would just kind of write from the main idea. So say you've got a riff, like there's the body of the riff, and just work around that, you know, so you can come up with the structure and an actual song. But the new law it's a really cool song. It's pure thrash, old school, and I think H sounds incredible on it, and I think we've just kind of progressed again from Plan of the Damned and The Man Who Became Himself. You know, I think this is another level, and I think the whole album is, to be honest, you know, and I'm really excited for everyone to hear it, you know.
It's a progression as well.
I love the title as well.
Yeah, it's good.
The title is just perfect.
It's a progression when sounding, like, audibly as well, because I can hear that more time and more input has been put into it, because there's the left right channels going on, and it stimulates not just your fucking ears, it gets you thinking, and you can see the time has been taken, which is a big thing when you've been a band that's been away for a long time and then just came back with an album. You have to put the time in, or it's people are just gonna go, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, well, I mean, it took a long time to write this album, a long time. So we really took our time with writing it, and it was a long process, but it was worth it, I'd say, you know. And I would love to know what other people think of it when they hear it, you know. And I think we're all proud of what we've achieved and how much we came together with writing these songs and coming up with the structures of the songs, you know. It's it's kind of like going from Obnoxious to this album is another progression in itself, in my opinion. You know, I think the band has definitely matured as musicians. I think H is, like I said, you know, his vocals are sounding incredible. I mean, even on the new law, you've heard him, you know, he's a little angry bastard.
He is an angry little fucker.
And he certainly shows that in that video, doesn't he?
Yes.
The album's out on September the 27th, and it's being released through Dissonance Records, and we're all excited for it to be out. The video was really fun to make. You know, it's like the first proper kind of music video that I've been part of, and it was a lot of fun. And as for the water spit thing, you know, that was originally, that wasn't actually going to be in the video, but it was the guy who did the video.
He's got to be a wrestling fan. He's got to be a wrestling fan.
Well, I think it was because he's friends with Paul, and I think Paul may have showed him, you know, some footage of us playing live, and I have done that water spitting thing for quite a long time now. But yeah, I mean, I used to like Triple H when I was a kid. So
it's
I
a
guess
good
maybe
comparison, to be fair. It's a good, yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's just, no, it's for the wrestling geeks.
It's the substitute for not having pyro.
Or like 19 abs. Because he's got like abs and steroids and abs. But yeah, it's really cool, and you should go out and listen to the track. I think I've earned you about like 0.0.1 pence on Spotify, at least, listening to it, man. So you can buy yourself, you can't buy fuck all, but like I'll keep playing till you can buy yourself at least a chomp.
Which you can buy a beer in about 4 years, and that'll be on us.
To be fair, I'll buy you a beer when we see you at the gig in London. But let's talk about the album we're going to review. It's Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. It was released in December 1973, and it was produced and recorded in Morgan Studios in London in September 1973. I'm not really going to talk about when I first heard it, because there's a lot of things for me that I'll talk about during the album review that will give you a clue from when it was. I heard it in the 90s, to be fair. So anyone want to step up and tell me, when did you first hear this album?
Well, both me and Mark, we would have heard this retrospectively, obviously, because neither of us were born at the time.
I'm not that fucking old. Fuck off. I was born in 1977, not fucking 73, you cunt.
Oh, well, never mind. we've been going over the albums one by one. We've been doing a Sabbath series, so everyone into Sabbath. If not, go back. So, yeah, I heard this retrospectively, and when I got into buying records, obviously, my own copy and all the rest of it. But, yeah, Mark, when did you first hear Sabbath, in particular, this album?
Well, the way it started with Sabbath for me was my mum's boyfriend at the time. He was well into Sabbath, and he got me into Iron Maiden, and he got us into a lot of heavy metal bands. And he had the Black Sabbath DVD. Well, it was on video back then. And it had Black Sabbath from Paris 1970. So when I watched that, I was well into Sabbath straight away. So from that, I got the he gave me the Best of Black Sabbath CD. So I got to, you know more about Black Sabbath in that way, more about their songs and understand them a bit more. So I can't really say exactly when I heard Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. But I just kind of went out one day and just bought a whole load of Black Sabbath albums. So I just kind of listened to one after the other. So, you know, that's kind of how it went for me. I mean, Black Sabbath are my favorite band of all time. I've got the Sabbath Demon tattooed on my arm, and it was one of my first tattoos. So, you know, I'm a big Black Sabbath fan, and Bill Ward is God to me on drums. So
Bill Ward is the man, and I'll say it again, and I said it the last time we probably talked about Sabbath. I have seen Bill Ward's penis in Milton Keynes.
What?
Well, like, he wasn't playing at the Ozfest in Milton Keynes. He wasn't playing because Bill Ward was doing something that Bill Ward done. He come on stage, and Ozzy whipped his fucking tweeds down, and I'm right at the front, and I have took ecstasy in vast quantities at this stage, and I am. It's burned into me retinas. Bill Ward's penis was like 6 feet away from me, and I was just like, okay.
I don't know what to say to that, mate.
No, neither do I. It was just one of them things. I've just seen his penis, and it's Bill Ward's an excellent drummer. And not everything they say about drumming and penis size is true, but like, he's still Bill Ward, so what else are we going to say?
Well, I mean, besides penis Bill Ward talk, again, it was Paris 1970, you know, seeing him play, I think it was Hand of Doom, where he just goes absolutely insane. Hand of Doom and War Pigs was just like, oh my God, this guy is amazing, you know. But it was, I think I said this last time, Symptom of the Universe on Sabotage, his drumming on that, no one has ever came close to playing it like Bill Ward did. So, you know, Bill Ward to me is, he's my biggest influence. He's the one who got me into wanting to play drums in the first place, you know.
I always think it's funny where John Bonham gets all the adulation he does and Bill Ward doesn't get quite half as much.
Yeah.
Do you think the man does a lot for your career? Do you think if that's what it was?
No.
Let me just stop you and just say no, because Bill Ward has the flair, man, and he continually shown that for several albums. So, no.
The difference between the difference between Bill Ward and John Bonham is Bill Ward was very much a combination of jazz, blues, rock, and then, you know, metal, all in one. And he had a lot more swing than John Bonham played in Led Zeppelin. And he was very spontaneous with the fills he did. Like you said, you know, he had so much flair to him, Bill Ward. He would just go crazy, but it would always work.
He had a bit more soul. There was something behind the drumming where, as Bonham, as good as he was not as soulful, if you get me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would honestly go with Bill Ward because, you know, Bill Ward's my favourite drummer of all time. And whenever Bill Ward does play, he puts soul into everything he plays, you know. Even like, you know, the videos from like 98 and stuff like that, you know, when he was kind of struggling with alcohol and all that kind of stuff, he still played his heart out. And I'm not saying John Bonham didn't. I mean, he was an incredible drummer himself, you know. And I think Ginger Baker was the one who said it, and I'm not saying I agree with him, but Ginger Baker said that, you know, that John Bonham can't swing for shit. I think Bill Ward, he's just got everything, you know, and he would always come up with these unique beats that you would never really expect anyone to play over what was played in Sabbath. He was just such a creative, spontaneous powerhouse, really, you know. And that was the thing, he could go from being really quiet dynamically to really loud, and it would always be with so much feel, you know. That's what I love about Bill Ward.
Yeah, totally. I do prefer Bill Ward over Bonham myself, personally, because like there is a bit more soul to it. And it is an often asked question, like for drummers as well, like, but there's the little fills, the little understanding of where the music's going. And with Sabbath and with the album that's coming up, there was so much different styles going into it that he seemed to be able to transition to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the thing is with John Bonham, it sounded super tight. You know, there was... There's nothing on the Led Zeppelin albums that you would change drumming wise. I mean, it is perfection in the way that it's tight. Black Sabbath, I think for that time were very experimental, and you know, they weren't trying to be metal. You know, it's not like they even knew what metal was. They just kind of did it. And Bill Ward was a big part of that with his style of drumming, And yeah, I think Bill Ward just had more of a spontaneous approach to his drumming than John Bonham did, I guess, in a more kind of I guess more in a jazzy way again, you know, like his fills, he would always use like rudiments, like all of the time, you know, like, and that's how he became, that's how to me, he's just as amazing as he is, you know, I can't say it enough how unbelievable he is to me, you know, like I say, a symptom of the universe, like listen to the drumming where it's, you know, when it, the riff just plays the open power chord, the down, down. He goes absolutely insane. Listen to any other drummer who has played that song, stepping in for Ozzy or Black Sabbath. And I guarantee, even watching the footage of Bill Ward live playing Symptom of the Universe, or listening to Symptom of the Universe on the Sabotage album, no one comes close to the way that Bill Ward plays it. Whenever anyone else plays it, it never feels quite right. But when Bill Ward's on it, it's like, that is spot on.
Well, I seen Sabbath with Faith No More's drummer. Because,
oh, yes.
Yes, it was at the Ozfest when I saw his Bill Ward's cock. But it wasn't the same. It felt a little bit more robotic than the music was,
yeah,
at the time, and the album tracks we all heard. And he does have that natural ability, and you do kind of need that when it comes to like a band that are well rehearsed, who played lots of fucking gigs here, there and everywhere. They had that jamming sound and quality that stands out on a lot of Black Sabbath early albums.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing is with Black Sabbath is they started off as a kind of blues band that were just jamming, and, you know, as blues musicians do, they just kind of jam stuff, you know, and the lyrics, the vocals will be improvised, and they seem to keep that side of Black Sabbath all the way through their career, really, you know, where it was just them playing by whatever comes out. I mean, that's kind of how they write stuff, isn't it? You know, they just kind of write and let it flow and just let it kind of do its own thing, and wherever it goes, you know. But they were very experimental, Black Sabbath, and psychedelic and bluesy, and, you know, they had the metal sound, and they had the rock sound, and they had the jazz sound, and they had the prog sound. They had a lot of different genres of music like combined into one, and I think that's why Black Sabbath are just, you know, the masters of what they do, you know. No one's come close, you know. I mean, there's bands out there who you know, I guess they try and sound like Black Sabbath, you know, clearly heavily influenced by them. I mean, one band, for example, Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats, I love that band, but you know, it's still nowhere near Black Sabbath, and I, you know, I'm sure that they would understand that it shouldn't be anywhere near Black Sabbath. But I mean, in the way that Black Sabbath are the only band that can do what they do.
No, that's totally true. It's like Led Zeppelin and that fucking Led Zeppelin copy. It's kind of like that in a way. For me, it's okay. Flattery is great, but at the same time, you're not that, so why?
Yeah. I think it's just because I don't know. Maybe it's because these bands know that like Led Zeppelin aren't really around anymore, and Black Sabbath have kind of faded out, and I guess labels pick them up because, you know, they think, well, that band's gone, so let's bring in what could potentially be the next, what people hear as Black Sabbath or whatever, you know, just to kind of keep it going, I guess. I don't know. Maybe.
Just to milk that cow a little bit longer.
I think one worthy successor of Sabbath, I think Cathedral and Candlemass. I think that they're the two bands that really picked up the gauntlet that Sabbath left and carried on with it.
I love both bands. It's just to me, I mean,
you heard me. Sorry.
Yeah. I love. You've been there for ages. I love the different vocalists. I mean, every vocalist that Black Sabbath have had. But Ozzy, for me, that lineup of Black Sabbath was just perfect. You know, that is Black Sabbath to me.
No, that's understandable. No, I get it because I grew up with it and I had the vinyl and shit. And well, not in 1973. It wasn't even a fucking jizz in my dad's sack. But yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. And sometimes when you replace a singer, it's so hard to do. But they seem to do all right, to be fair, to a certain extent. For me, anyway.
I love Tony Martin. You know, I think he was a very, very, very good singer. You know, and obviously Dio was just mind blowing, and there was just a lot of. I mean, Glenn Hughes, you know, he sang in Sabbath at one point. But they had so many good vocalists, you know. But to me, I don't think Ozzy gets enough praise for what he actually did, vocal-wise in Black Sabbath. You know, the notes he sings are very high.
Yes.
You know, and I don't think he gets enough praise for that. You know, because I mean, I get it. Dio's technically a better vocalist, but
sometimes things just work. And
yeah, and that's the way it was for Black Sabbath. You know, that lineup was just, it was meant to be.
Yeah. So let's take us on to the track of the album, the title track, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. You should know this if you like Sabbath. I owned it on vinyl and I sold it to go party on in a rock club in Liverpool. And the chorus is experimental and musical, and I didn't expect it when I heard it. I've heard it like thousands of times since I heard it first, and it's not like Paranoid in a way, which burns my head out. And like my partner's dad has Paranoid as a ringtone, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can never get away from the song, but like I love it. And the meaty end riff on this fucking track is spot on, and it's a top fucking opener, and it's a great finish at the end of the track. Yeah, what an opening track, love it.
What a great way to start an album with that sort of riff. Just gets your attention straight away, you know. It's just such an awesome heavy riff, and Tony Iommi, the riffs he comes up with, I mean, he's my favourite guitarist of all time, you know. Just the riffs he comes out with, just so evil sounding, but yet melodic and just so powerful, you know. There's no one like Tony Iommi, there's no one like Geezer Butler, there's no one like Bill Warden, there's no one like Ozzy Osbourne. And when those, they come together, it just creates something amazing. And this song in particular, I would say is, you know, it's a standout song for Black Sabbath. I've not really heard it that many times live by Black Sabbath. So I would like to hear that maybe in the future when they have more gigs lined up, but who knows. But yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you mean by the chorus. It is experimental and it's very unexpected, but it's really cool. It's kind of jazzy, bluesy kind of vibe, you know, compare it to the first riff that you hear this song.
Have you noticed Tony Iommi always has that beautiful, bushy, wonderful moustache?
Yes, he did.
But you notice on the inlay card of Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, he's clean shaven.
Ah, that's
and
very
that is
true.
Because
yes.
Because the opening riff of this song fucking blew that thing off when he first heard it in the studio. how can you not love this song? It's one of the perfect Sabbath songs.
Yeah.
mind you, pretty much everything they did was perfect. But yeah, this is a funny album. This, I mean, to many, it's the best Black Sabbath album. I'm not quite up there myself, but when you take those first eight albums, it is just a collection. It's just a solid body of work that just cuts off at eight. And to me, Bloody Sabbath as a whole with an album is an important part of that. It's an important chapter of that work, of that book, if you will. But I only ever really listen to this album every so often with a band that I love as much as this band. Do you ever sort of get an album, like a whole collection of albums, and then you just go, right, I'm going to go album one and just work my way through the catalogue?
Yes.
That's only really, you sort of do it every 2 years or every year or something with certain bands. I only ever really listen to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath when I do that with these guys. And that's not to say I don't like the album, but it's quite funny how I rarely just put it on of its own. But I love this song. I think it's just got one. It's one of the heaviest riffs that's open, but then it's also this multi-layered sort of wonderful song with just so much going on in it. It's as much as it's a well-known Sabbath song, it's actually quite an underrated song in general, I think.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's got great lyrics. I love the sort of melodic bit during the chorus. And
Ozzy's vocals at the end is very high in that riff, you know, the da 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 da. In that riff,
yeah.
When Ozzy sings,
do you run to?
It's really high. Nails it, you know.
Never does it live now, though, fortunately.
No, and I understand why now, because I just said to Alan before that I wonder why they don't play this song live, but that makes sense now, doesn't it? It is very high to sing. But yeah, it's such a great track and a great way to start an album off, for sure.
And National Acrobat, this is another great song to continue. Who covers this song?
Metallica.
Yeah, I couldn't remember who the fuck done it. If you think about this song and think about like how evil are these lyrics now, but then just throw back to 1973, this is fucking evil. The 2 minutes 18 seconds change is fucking great. I'm talking to you, and then it goes into a bit of funk. And that's why I love Black Sabbath, man. They just meld the different fucking styles into one package. And the dual guitar solo thing on this particular song is spot on, because this was long before you're getting your everyone does a dual fucking guitar solo thing that we've got now in metal. And yeah, man, it's cool. It's the longest track on the album, but it moves you along really well and you don't even notice. And then it goes really happy near the end, and then it bongos, fucking bongos, is what I put in the notes. It goes mad with bongos, man. Spot on, man. I really fucking love this track.
Which version, I mean, this is a stupid question, really, but which version do you prefer, the Metallica version or the Black Sabbath version, and why?
That's a tough one. I don't mind the Metallica one, but the Metallica one sticks in the mind a little bit more.
I think it's lesser experimental, isn't it? The Metallica version, like Black Sabbath, like I say, it's got funk in and it's got the jazz parts and all that kind of stuff. Where Metallica, it's just like full-on rock kind of in your face, you know?
Yeah, there's no funk.
Yeah.
Can't there's live no
funk, man.
No, I'd like I'm a bass player, for fuck's sake. Of course I like funk. But, yeah, man, this is a top track, and two tracks in, I'm enjoying myself, man. This is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great song, and it's. Would you? I mean, I was thinking about this because, you know, I'm a fan of Technical Ecstasy, and I hear vibes from Technical Ecstasy that are in the Sabbath Bloody Sabbath album, where they've gone that kind of experimental. I mean, Technical Ecstasy was more experimental, but I think Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, there was, they definitely added a bit more in terms of being experimental compared to the last previous albums. Would you agree?
Totally. There is a lot going on this that just wasn't on the last. It was more direct Route 1, where this is just, we're going over here and you either like it or not.
Exactly.
And I like that ballsy attitude.
Yeah.
In this album in particular.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I was saying about Black Sabbath. You know, they didn't really have any rules about what kind of style of music they were. They just played, and if they liked it, they released it. And what they came up with was genius. And like I say, no one else would be able to come up with it other than Sabbath. But yeah, I mean, that the middle section in this song is one of the highlights for the song for me. It's
like Stevie Wonder-esque.
Yeah.
It's got that Stevie Wonder funk going on. I fucking love Stevie Wonder. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. I'm a metalhead, but I love Stevie Wonder. Fucking
absolutely, man. There's nothing wrong with Stevie Wonder, mate. I've got about 7 or 8 Stevie. Nothing wrong there at all.
Sir Duke is the best Stevie Wonder song ever, and I've learnt the bass line and it's a cunt. Joe has just died, and we will resurrect him. Next show, he's just had a cunt of an internet connection all night, and we battled through, and we've been talking for at least nearly 2 hours, and yeah, we've decided to carry on regardless. Let's go on to Fluff. This is one of my all-time favourite instrumentals.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's just nice. I started coming to... Like, I'm living in London now with me future missus. I call her me missus because, fuck, no one else can put up with me. And I always... I'd always listen to Sabbath on minidisc. And I always remember leaving... London, and then this song came on, and yeah, and I was really upset. It's like as cheesy as fuck, and I can get a little bit sentimental around it, but like it came up, and this song came on the mini disc, and this was mine and her song. She doesn't fucking remember it. I was talking to her before, and she doesn't have a clue. But this sentimental attachment to this particular song for me. It's cheesy, yeah, but yeah, and it does sound very bardy. It is a bit Brave Sir Robin-ish,
yeah.
But like, yeah, man, great music binds itself to a time in your life, and that lasts forever. And for me, Fluff is that song.
What a
great
what
track.
A title for a track as well. You know, I wonder why they call it Fluff. But it's a beautiful. Beautiful piece of music, and you know there's not much to it really. You know, it's short, it's very straight to the point. There's only a couple of parts in it, you know, changes in it, but you know there's piano and there's harpsichord in it, and steel guitars and acoustic guitars, you know, and it's just so nice. It's a beautiful melody. And again, it's just the genius of Tony Iommi, you know, playing by pure feel, and he's just got this certain sound that when he plays, it just stands out and it cuts through, you know. It doesn't matter whether he plays heavy distorted guitar or soft melodic guitar, you know. A lot of the stuff that I like from Tony Iommi is the stuff that he improvises live, where he does a lot of the finger picking type stuff, you know, which reminds me of Fluff, you know, where it's just him playing on the guitar and just jamming along. And like I say, it's just such a short, beautiful piece of music that I wouldn't say that you would necessarily expect from Black Sabbath, But then again, what would you expect from Black Sabbath if they, you know, to that extreme of being experimental with their music, you know, and not having a stamp on what style they are?
No, they actually didn't give a fuck when it come to what they were doing. You would never expect this third track into the fucking an album on the back of the last one. No fucking way.
Absolutely.
And for me, it's got so much a sentimental attachment, not just from this song, for others as well. And yet, it just, when you've got that attachment of a certain time in your life, you will carry that with you. And Sabbath done this, not just for me, but millions and millions of people around the world. And yeah, man, that's a mark of a band that will stand the test of time, in my opinion, to be fair. But like, a great track, and it takes us on to Sabra Cadabra. I don't mind the Metallica cover of this one, to be completely fair.
Again, it's a very in-your-face kind of rock version of it, isn't it? You know, rather than the experimental version of what Sabbath did, you know?
Yeah. And like, yeah. Sabbath's version seems a little bit quicker, and Bill Ward is giving it the bifters on this one. He is really fucking smashing it out on this one, and we just need to take a second from the original. Just big up Bill Ward, man. He is really going for it in this one, which, for the song itself, in the context, he could have phoned it in, but no, he fucking didn't. He fucking bashed one out, literally.
Yeah,
he fucking nailed it, to be fair. And I was singing this early this morning when I was typing up my notes. I've listened to it fucking thousands of times anyway. My other half got pissy with me because I woke up singing along to this. It's a toe tapper, and the bass line is fucking spot on, and the breakdown in about 2 minutes is great. And you forget at times with Sabbath how fucking proggy this bit is, where they break down, man. It's fucking cool as fuck. I totally adore this song. I'm enjoying it so much I forgot to type. At this time, I'm just like, I'm getting into this. Shit, I've got to type stuff. And yeah, that's what this kind of song does for me, because it's a big contrast to the Metallica one, because there's a little bit more proggy going on. It's more of a change where the Metallica have stuck to what Metallica do when they covered it, really.
Well, I think this song has, it's kind of like one of those songs that you can click your fingers to, you know, like da 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 da. It's a jazzy sort of feel, you know. It's a nice swing to it. Ozzy's vocals on this, especially in the middle section, just so raw and so much feeling in his vocals. His vocals are amazing on this song, I think. It's a great song. The middle section is awesome. You know, compared to the Metallica version, I know exactly what you're saying. Like, the Metallica version, it's just got more kind of grit to it, kind of.
It's a bit more venomous.
And less experimental and less proggy. Yeah. You know, it hasn't really got that swing feel. It's just more kind of, it's got a lot more energy, even though it's not as fast, which is quite strange. This song has a great feel to it, one that you can tap along to, and it's very, very catchy. The lyrics are very catchy. And what do you think of the ending? Because the ending, if you want to talk about experimental or just improvisation, you know, that's kind of this is the song where you would focus on looking at improvisation.
Thing is, though, I reckon they were just given leeway to do what the fuck they want at this stage, and they just decided, well, we're going to do what the fuck we want, and that's what I admire about them, because they're a well-oiled band anyway. They've been playing pubs for fucking donkey's years before the first album, so I just thought, fuck it, we're just going to let them go with it, and they went with it, and I fucking respect it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the beauties of Black Sabbath, you know, on the records is the whoever produced their albums always kind of kept in mind that, you know, the beauty of Black Sabbath is They're a real sounding band, and it's not like you have a song and it ends here. You know, you could keep recording it and they could just carry on jamming and it would become part of the song.
Like Blow on the Jug.
Yeah, totally.
It's like that. But everyone remembers that little bit at the end of the song, Blow on a Jug. It's proper, it's just bollocks, but everyone remembers Let's Blow on a Jug. It's totally one of them. Killing Yourself to Live. I've got a Marmite relationship with this track, and sometimes I love it, sometimes I hate it, because it was fucking done to death for me. But some of the riffs they write are immortal, and when the chorus kicks in with the minimal distortion, that is heavy as fuck when the distortion is minimal. And it,
they've kind of went a bit back to the sound of what you know, the song Sabbath Bloody Sabbath sounded like, where it's more, it's the heavier version of Black Sabbath. But the difference between Killing Yourself to Live and Sabbath Bloody Sabbath is, in Killing Yourself to Live, they kind of keep that heaviness going. You know, they're all kind of I guess the original way Black Sabbath kind of played their songs, where it was just a lot heavier throughout rather than more experimental, like you know, the last three tracks that were mentioned, like National Acrobat and Fluff and Sabracadabra. You know,
the best solo on the album, and being somewhat of a smoker, smoking, getting high, I fucking love that shit. And this for me is one of them songs, there's so much going on, you forget yourself and you kind of get lost in the music. And music for me is all about escapism. You're fucking pissed off, you'll put something on that brings you up. You're tired, just something to send you to sleep, to escape from what's going on around you. And this is escapism in music, man. And I have got a love-hate relationship with it, but this, they just nail it. And at this time, I really fucking love it.
I love the solo that Tony Iommi plays. It's so memorable, so catchy. The riff in the chorus, like you said, is just, it's so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But this song, I actually used to play it all of the time in my grandma's garage when I first had a drum kit.
Nice.
This was my go-to, well, one of the go-to songs for Black Sabbath. It's just awesome because it's so heavy and you can really get into it, you know. And like you say, it's a good song for a release, and it was really good for drums for having that release as well.
Yeah, it's good to take it away, and that's what music is. It's escapism from the shite that you have to deal with, and that's why metal is such a strong thing, because metalers aren't people who are your normal everyday people who are walking down the street. They're people who have got shit going on or something else, something that draws you away from the norm. And anything that offers you that escapism in music form, especially in metal, I'm all for it, man. It's fucking great stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, the middle section for me as well is a standout thing on my album. You know, you know that it's like the stops in the middle,
yeah,
where you've got Ozzy singing in the little breaks, just awesome, you know. And again, it kind of went back to the kind of bluesy sort of style where it was them just kind of improvising and having fun. But every time I listen to Black Sabbath, I always go, how the heck did you write a song like this? You know, pretty much every song they've written, I'm like that, you know.
Especially with the amount of drugs that was flying around at this particular time as well, for them as well.
That probably had part to do with it, really, didn't it, you know?
Yeah, it's just a weird thing with them. So let's take us on to the next one. Who are you? I'm going to go straight in with my... the sentimental thing is attached to this. One of my best friends, Steve, he later turned into a crackhead and turned out turned up outside my door just before I moved to London several years ago with a knife and said, let me in your living room and I'm going to sit there. And I was like, you've got a knife, you can come in and sit down. And he had this flat in Walton, a shithole, and it was his first flat. All he had was a stereo. We had a big bag of weed, candles and nothing else. And we listened to this song and it was cool. And the neighbour who lived underneath Steve was a fucking pisshead. He was just a violent alcoholic fucking piece of shite. And you could just hear him shouting and trying to fight everything. And we just turned this song really high and got really high. And it was one of them. I was a pop newbie at the time. And there's just a lot of attachment to that. And I don't know. We turned it right up and the piano breakdown and it was fucking cool as shit. You can tell they just walked into a studio and there was just moogs to fuck.
I can imagine that, to be honest, you know, especially with that sort of intro. It's very psychedelic.
Yeah, and you got the who are you, whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
And like, and this is...
The bit after that, the do, 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 do. It just, it's when, you know, it's very proggy, psychedelic. It's not really something you would expect after listening to Killing Yourself to Live, to be honest, you know, but that's, again, the beauty of Black Sabbath, you know. You never know what to expect and it keeps it fresh.
They mix it up so well as well. They mix up, I love this word, plethora. Let me just say it again, plethora. I really love that word. They mix up a plethora of styles. I've said it three times and I love it. But like, they really do it and they blend it well, where a lot of bands don't. And the lyrics as well. Ozzy does not write amazing lyrics at times, and I'm not sure if he wrote this one, if I'm completely honest. But the main thing that points to me, and I always remember, now I found you out, I don't think you're so smart. It just always has that, like, I think of this song and boom, there it is.
It's a very strong message, isn't it? Mm. It's like, who is he actually saying it about? That's what I wonder, you know. But I like that kind of mystery towards it, you know.
Yeah, there's so much going on with it as well. And it is this is the most pot song that Sabbath done for me. It is the most weedy type song, and you can tell they were probably smoking a fair bit of it at the time.
This is the kind of song that you would probably hear on Technical Ecstasy. You know, it's got that kind of proggy kind of, you know, a lot of synth in it, and it's very psychedelic.
It's War of the Worlds-esque. It's War of the Worlds-esque.
Yes.
I'm getting that kind of, let's just throw it out there. And it's really fucking cool. And I've got sentimental attachment to it. My friend, God, I hope to never see this cunt again. If he's listening, I hope you're not on crack. But let's go on to the next song. Looking for Today. In the context of the album, for me, it's probably the least memorable one here. And it is a bit poppy. And then the flute comes on and I'm like, whoa, okay then, surprise. It's not the best song by a long chalk, but it keeps the album going for me, and it is probably the only filler on it, but it's killer filler. And
I
get stuck. Like, when I had this album on vinyl and I sold it to go to the Crazy House in Liverpool, anyone who listens from Liverpool, there was a little record shop just on the same road on Wood Street, and I sold my copy of the album. And this song had a skip on it, and I've got the Looking for Today, and then it would just skip and bounce back to that little part of the song, and it would just do it over and over again. I'm glad I sold that for a fiver. It got me three drinks. It's killer filler, but it does a job, and everything else has been
really
spot on.
I like the flute in it. I've got to admit, I really like the flute. I mean, it doesn't sound like it has to be there. It could kind of do without it, but I love it. I love it when bands get that kind of experimental, you know. It's one of the reasons why one of my favourite Opeth albums is Heritage, which a lot of people don't like, but it's, you know, it's that same sort of experimental thing where it's just like you've got flutes and you've got synth and you've got everything, you know. But I think it really sounds cool in it. But I agree that it's a kind of filler track, but it does keep the album going. It kind of keeps, I don't know, it's kind of strange to describe really, but you listen to this one rather than get into it, I guess.
Yeah, and there's a lot of musical differences going on. They're not afraid to throw the fucking ball out. Whether that is we don't give a fuck or whether that's drugs, we won't know because we weren't fucking there. Like, but yeah, I just can't get the skip on the fucking the record I have, man. It's just looking for today. Fuck off. I nearly fucking launched the stereo for this. It got that bad. I was really drunk and I was like, fuck off. Got really annoyed. It was like, yeah, Joe with his internet on this show. It kept going fucking mental, and in the end, you just have to bow out. I was getting to that with that. So we're going on Spiral Architect. I love the intro, and I don't know from the first time I heard it what's going to happen next. And this, for me, is the fucking best song on the album by a country mile. It kicks in, and yes, it does. It's cosmic. It's fucking great. The chorus is gold, man. It's gold. You know that I should. Imagine if you were in a band in 1973, and like, I'm a musician, you're a drummer, I'm a bass player, technically musician, half a musician, but like, if I heard this and I had something coming out and I heard this before the album come out, I'd be fucking gutted, because there's a lot of shit that was out at the time that wasn't even close to what's going on this album, man. I would be so fucking gutted. But yeah, the orchestral bit that kicks in as well. And, you know, they've just tried to throw stuff at a wall at times, and I'm not sure what the outtakes was, and I'd love to fucking see what didn't make this album, because what did was fairly good, to be fair. And yeah, perfect ending for me for what has been.
I mean, it gets a round of applause at the end as well, doesn't it, you know? So
I love that little bass bit at the end. Well,
Geezer Butler, I mean, come on, absolutely mind-blowing bass player.
Yes.
And what a guy on stage as well, you know, just so animated and just incredible to watch him play bass, and, you know, just watch him on stage. He's just so into it, so much feel, but he's so animated, and he's just awesome, you know. He's incredible. He's a bother.
Agreed. It's a really great finish to, for me, what has been a spectacular album. And yeah, they pushed out the boat some more, and they did on the previous album, but this, they just fucking threw it out there, and then there it was. And yeah, it fades away, it's over, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, it does seem quite, it's strange, because, you know, there's not many Black Sabbath albums that have a lot of tracks on, but this one does seem to kind of, I mean, in a good way, maybe, you know, that it makes you want to hear more. You know, you want more tracks on this album.
Yeah.
But this song is great. It's a really good way to end the album. And the lead line there, I fucking love that. It's just so cool.
It's when the
Yeah.
It's just
again,
epic.
Ozzy's vocals on this album really are just amazing, really. They're just, I don't think anyone would be able to pull it off as well as Ozzy did, to be honest. And I don't think he gets enough credit for what he actually did in Black Sabbath vocal-wise, you know? Because everyone just seems to kind of go, well, Dio was better. And it's like, well, yeah, it technically was, but Ozzy...
Right place, right time.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely.
And everything fell into place. Dio, technically, yes, I agree. Fuck yes. But when you've got the certain elements together, you can come out with a masterpiece. And as far as I can say with this album, they fucking did. And let's take us on to the out of 10. And there is very few albums for me, like, where I can safely say 10, but yeah, it's a 10, even with Looking for Today, which we could probably delete and it'd be cool. Yeah, I'm giving this a straight 10, man. This album has so many great songs in it, so many great solos, bass lines are on there, Bill Ward is going fucking mental at times, and so many surprises compared to the last one. It was a little bit more cut and dry, like you said earlier. This one just had everything for me, and it's a straight 10, man. I fucking love this album.
Is this your favourite Black Sabbath album?
Yes.
Really? Wow. Okay, cool.
It's just got everything. They weren't afraid to experiment in the past, but this one, they just pushed it out, man, and there was just so many fucking sentimental and emotional attachments that I got with this album, more than any other, and you cannot discount that. You find your attachment to music where you find it, and I found so much with this one than I have with others. For me, it's a straight 10. What about you?
It's not my favourite Black Sabbath album. I mean, I love it. I love all Black Sabbath albums. But for me, I would say 8 out of 10. I love the musicianship in this album. I love how they went to kind of another level of experimenting with their music. The songwriting is really cool. Like I say, you know, the prog side, the jazz feel, with blues and rock and metal, and you've got a mix with, you know, total different sounds with different songs. You know, like, you know, so you've got like Killing Yourself to Live, and then you've got something like, you know, Who Are You, which is just a totally different thing, really. But it's strange because every song on this album just seems to flow really well, which you wouldn't really expect with how experimental they get with certain songs, you know, but it just really seems to flow really well. But yeah, 8 out of 10 for me. I love Black Sabbath always. This isn't my favourite Black Sabbath album, but it's a very good album indeed.
Yeah, it's a great album, and Sabbath for me are just, it's just a pillar of heaven to listen to, and anybody who thinks different, fuck off, stop listening to the podcast. We don't want you here. So, Mark, where do we find everything you do, and where do you teach drums? Because you put up some cool testimonies and cool videos of kids who can bash drums, and it must make you jealous. Fucking hell, man, I see 12-year-old bass players and I want them to die. So where do we find all your shit, dude?
So you can find Stick to Your Drums on Facebook, or you could email me at sticktoyourdrums@hotmail.com if you want to ask any questions about drum lessons. I teach via Skype or in the northeast, Newcastle, on Benfield Road at a place called Clothworks, in my own studio. I love teaching. You know, it's strange because when you play music as much as I do, I mean, I like to play as much as I can and try to stay focused on being as good as I can to progress as a musician. When you sometimes you kind of feel like you're kind of hitting a brick wall, and it's sometimes because you kind of don't feel like you have the same sort of energy to give out, you know, so you kind of feel like you're not really getting anywhere further forward. But teaching, when you see other people get inspired by wanting to play and wanting to create something fresh that they've come up with, like my students, you know, sometimes I would give them an exercise where they can go away and just come up with their own thing, like a fill or something like that. Just to see them and how they react is really inspiring to me. So it's kind of like it works both ways, you know, like maybe I inspire them as a teacher, you know, I hope that I do anyway, and they inspire me, you know, they make me want to progress and be as good as I can be, and they keep that goal that I want to reach fresh, you know, which is, it's a beautiful thing, really.
Given back, is the best thing you can do. You just like we like never earned any money doing everything we've done with like podcasts or fucking radio or whatever. But like I want to give back to the music that gives so much to me, and to know that you've made an impression or you've helped someone who you've never heard of, someone's heard your song in fucking Brazil or whatever. It's just like, it's cool as fuck, man. It's so gratifying to give something back and to give things to other people and let them build upon it and move on, man. There's nothing better than that feeling. I could totally get that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me, but it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, the cool thing about the lessons is, you know, you don't just kind of read sheet music and play along to that. You would actually play along to tracks. So, like, you know, for one example, one of the tracks is the Red Hot Chili Peppers Can't Stop. So you would play along to that, and I would kind of break it down so it's kind of simplified. So it doesn't matter what level you're at, you can still play along to it and still have fun, you know, which is really important rather than just going. You know, I mean, yes, there's parts where you would kind of read from sheet music and play along with it, but the majority of it is, you know, musicians, when they want to learn an instrument, they want to play along to music. They don't want to read music and play along to reading, you know, a piece of paper with music on it. You want to play along to music, or you want to be in a band, either or, you know. So I try to involve music in the lessons where they can play along to songs that they like, which makes it really fun, you know. And it's great because it ends up being really fun to me as a teacher, you know, and seeing them create something of their own is a great thing as well, you know. And seeing them progress is an amazing feeling, and for myself and seeing them progress and seeing how much they're enjoying the progression is an awesome thing as well, you know.
Thing is, though, the most thing I envy, and the natural musician, you come across them every so often. I personally, you could say a note to me and I'd be like, what the fuck? I'd just tune by ear and just try and play along. But like, you'll see certain musicians as you move through life in general, and you're just like, Jesus Christ, they just seem to have it. And that's what, just going back to the last album, that seemed to happen. Okay, it came through a lot of hard work, don't get me wrong, but when you've got that natural ability, that can take you a fucking long way. And it's so good to see that in the kids that are coming up, because it's a lost art in a way, because it's all fucking auto-tune, record, re-record, or that's wrong by half a semi-beat, blah, 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 blah. That goes missing a lot. But when you come across that natural talent, it's a nice thing to see. It's a good thing to behold.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it still blows my mind to see how far some of my students have got, you know, like in very little time. And, you know, I've had students come up to us before, like, you know, people come up to us before their students and going, oh, you know, I could never play drums. They say, well, why don't you try, you know? So they'll give it a go, and I'll say to them, I guarantee that I could teach you, at least you'll be able to play one song or two songs in one lesson. And you know, it always happens, you know, and they always kind of go, didn't expect that, you know. And you know, you can read the reviews on freeindex.com if you search stick to your drums, but the majority of them always, you know, seem to say that that they didn't expect to learn so much in so little time. And the majority of students I've had that say, oh, you know, I didn't really progress with the last teacher I had because we just did the same thing over and over again. And it just annoys me because, you know, I try to put my heart and soul into music overall, and my responsibility as a teacher is to help the student progress as much as they can and enjoy it. You know, you're not going to enjoy it if you're going to do the same things over and over again. And, you know, the new student I've got now you know, I asked him on the last lesson, I said, you know, are you enjoying the lessons? He was like, yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't expect to come this far already. And he's got his first gig coming up, and I've only been teaching him for 2 months. And he's an awesome drummer. And that's a shout out to Rory, whose dad, actually, this is a strange story, but his dad was the drummer in Atomcraft at one point.
Wow.
Which is
nice.
Very strange.
Carrying the sticks on, man, that's fucking cool.
The only way I found that out is because on the review he actually put, and it's a small world, because he, Mark Jackson, is also the drummer in Atomcraft, the band I used to be in, and I was like, whoa, what? But nice. Yeah, I mean, it's really cool, you know, especially seeing, you know, the students gig and
yeah, man,
you know, just kind of go out there and do their own thing, you know. It's great, and hearing them say, you know, I didn't expect to learn so much in so little time, is a great thing, because it makes me feel good about myself as a drum teacher, knowing that, you know, I'm doing a good job and I'm doing the right things to help them progress, you know.
Awesome. So the new Acid Rain stuff is coming soon. Yes. The single is out. Don't do what I did, because I'm a tight ass and I have no money. Don't go on Spotify, because they don't get fuck all. Go and actually buy physical MP3s, and when the album comes out, buy some fucking vinyl, and don't sell it to go out and drink, because that's a bad move. But yeah, go out and buy it, because from what I've heard, it's fucking cool. I love the song, I'm a thrasher, and I want all of our listeners to go out and actually support fucking bands, man, who are still going out there and doing shit, because music's a hard fucking bitch to master and hard to make money. And there's very few I know who are like yourself, who make a living from the spectrum of music. A lot of people are doing a fucking shit job and then doing the music on the other side. So if you can support musicians, do it. Go out and buy the music. Mark, it's been fucking cool. We've gone through hell in this podcast to Joe died, and then he'll be resurrected next fucking show, like, but we got to the end, man. It's been really fucking cool, man. I've really enjoyed
absolutely.
It
absolutely. All things Sabbath, can't go wrong with that.
Exactly. You can find the show on at Rock Show Online on Twitter. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on fucking Google Podcasts, we're everywhere. Big us up, share the show, don't be a cunt. Thanks for listening, see you later.